हरिओम। सो वी आर लिसनिंग टू द ग्लोरीज ऑफ द लॉर्ड बिकॉज द गोल ऑफ स्पिरिचुअल प्रोग्रेस और द स्पिरिचुअल जर्नी एज स्वामी चिन्मयानंद सेज इज डिटैच एंड अटैच, डिटैच एंड अटैच। यू डिटैच फ्रॉम द वर्ल्ड ऑफ ऑब्जेक्ट्स बिकॉज आवर माइंड इज ऑल द टाइम फोकस्ड ऑन ऑब्जेक्ट्स, पीपल, थिंग्स, इमोशंस। यू डिटैच फ्रॉम दैट एंड अटैच टू द लॉर्ड दैट इज इन माई हार्ट। So detach and attach, that is Swami Chinmayananda. He says if you want to know the entire essence of all the scriptures of the world, just these two words, detach and attach, and that will cover everything that's written in the Bible, the Quran, the Gita and everywhere. It's the essence, because we are constantly holding on to objects, emotions, things, people, position, power, because that is the only thing that we think is important. And from childhood, we have been conditioned that you have to get more and become more powerful and more money and more friends and more, you know, all that. You know, that is all required, but that becomes the only goal in life. And then by the time we are 65, 70, and you say, I worked so hard, I did so much, and I didn't do anything for my afterlife. And that is actually the main purpose of human birth. So you detach from the world does not mean that you don't love people, but you slowly reduce your dependence. As you know, we get older, and as our children are, a lot of them are, have gone to college or they are settled, and we are now less dependent on them, then we slowly start spending more time in thinking about the Lord, in praying to Him, in studying about Him, reading good books, meeting with saints, meditating, spending more time in the church or temple or mosque. So these 75 indicators that have been given by the Lord in this 10th chapter, you see, so these are very simple examples of how you can see me everywhere in the world as you go around everywhere. Like when you see the sunrise, you see His glory, you know, you can chant the Gayatri Mantra. When you see the beautiful moon, yesterday we had such a bright, closest moon. And in that peaceful, quiet, you know, if you look out, yesterday we were looking out, you know, the mountains even could be seen from our backyard. And that there was so much silence. And in that silence, you feel the Lord's presence with the moonlight. So, simple example, you see the rain, you know, you see a beautiful rainbow in the sky, you see birds flying, you know, how can these little birds and, you know, fly all over? What is the power that makes them fly? Even, you know, childbirth, how this, you know, little baby and comes out and then how the child grows. And the idea is that the more you remember the Lord, the more your mind is focused. And then also on any achievements I have, anything I have done, anything I have accomplished, anything glorious I have done, or anything I have been successful in. So the more you remember the Lord, the more your mind is saturated with divine thoughts, with divine ideas. And so this chapter is beautiful. One should read it again. And so that what that is doing is reminding you that He is everywhere. And that is the purpose of this chapter, that the Lord is in everything and also in me. And that is one thing that we always forget, that He is in me as life. And He is the closest thing to me. In fact, that is my true nature. So seeing Him outside is very good, but also one has to constantly see Him within and see Him as the life, as the subject. You know, we always think of God as an object. Oh, He's there as Krishna or Jesus, and I bow to Him, and that is good. But He is the subject. He is the knower of my thoughts. He is the knower of my eyes. Whatever my eyes are seeing are known by Him. Whatever my ears are listening, whatever my tongue is tasting, whatever my hands are doing, whatever my speech is all because of that. And He knows He knows my thoughts. He knows all my emotions. And so He is the subject. As Swamiji last week when he was here, he said, switch your attention from the objects to the subject. And I have been trying to practice that as often as I remember that. Right now our attention is only on the chair or the people or my friends or my enemies or my relatives or my possessions. But switch the attention to who knows this? Who knows my body? who knows my mind, who knows, and that is who I am. The moment you switch your attention from the objects to the subject, it's a miraculous change in your thinking. And suddenly your mind becomes very quiet. It's a very interesting exercise. You know, just switch to your attention to the subject and you will find that your mind will instantly quieten, because then the world becomes less important. And that is the essence of this chapter. And all the Bhagavad Gita, the 7th, 8th and 9th chapter, they all talk about the knower of the field. Even in the 9th chapter, he talks about the witnessing consciousness. In the 13th chapter, he talks about the field and the knower of the field. So who is the knower? That is the Lord. So today we'll do verse number 38, which is the last one, which describes the Lord's glories. And then we have four summary verses. So verse number 38. Dando damayatam asmi. Nitirasmi jigishatam. Maunam chaivasmi guhyanam. Jnanam jnanavatamaham. So dando damayatam asmi. Damayatam asmi means among the punishers. So among people who punish, I am the scepter, S-C-E-P-T-R-E, scepter. So in the olden days, when there were kings, so when a king was crowned, you know, they put the crown on his head, signifying that he is the ruler of the whole kingdom, and that he has the, you know, the burden of the whole kingdom on his head. And then they gave him a scepter, a stick, like a 3-foot stick, which was decorated and had jewels and... So, and the king always carried that. When he walked into the court, he carried that stick. When he sat down to pronounce judgment on the subjects, the stick was beside him. He didn't have an assistant carry that stick. Everything else the assistants would do, but the scepter he had to carry. Why? Because that represented the ability to punish. Because a stick, you know, like even a child is misbehaving, you say, if you don't behave, I'm going to beat you. Nowadays, of course, you can't do that because they'll call the police. But when we were growing up, the stick was a very effective weapon. And that's why we find, you know, even in society, you know, people say, I don't need to work. You know, the government is going to take care of me. Why? Because there is no discipline. There is no, nothing is enforced. You know, people just do what they want. And if there is no discipline, life would not work. Like if there's no traffic lights. You know, that is a form of discipline. Okay, it's a control that the lights are there, so people should stop. If there was no CHP, people say, you know, these guys go around giving tickets. But think about it. If there was no CHP, people would be driving on I-5 at 80, 90, 100, whatever speed as far as the car would go, and then there would be chaos. So the stick represents discipline, the ability to control. So the king has this power to control, or a policeman, you know, who has a uniform, has the power to, because of his uniform. If he's not wearing a uniform, he cannot arrest you. But if he's wearing a uniform and walks around, then the thieves and everybody know, okay, you know, there is a policeman here. We have to behave. So that's why he says, I am the ability to discipline. Whatever, like a president, you know, he has the power to discipline. He has also the power to pardon, which has been given to him by the majority of the people. So he says, dando damayatam asmi, niti asmi jigishatam. Among the victors, jigishata means among the victors, I am niti. Niti means statesmanship. So Swamiji in his commentary says, he says like one country conquers another. You know, you conquer by force and you put your army everywhere, but the people are still hostile to you. They still don't want you there. And at any given opportunity, they could revolt. So then slowly you try to impose your will upon them through statesmanship, through changing their thinking. Like we went to Tibet a few years back. Swamiji took us to Kailash. And the Chinese conquered Tibet first, you know, with their troops, with their army. And they just took over, and these monks were either killed or forced to leave, and their books were burnt, and you know, all that. The monks were especially very badly treated by the Chinese. But still the Tibetan people resent them, and they have not truly conquered the hearts of the people. So of course they are doing it in an evil way. What they're doing is now they are moving Chinese into Tibet because China is overpopulated. They said, oh, there's this plenty of land. So they are settling them. They are giving them money and giving them land and confiscating Tibetan property and giving it to them so that slowly Tibet should be totally infiltrated by Chinese and they will take it over. So that is an evil way, but the idea is that you can conquer by force, but until you change the thinking of the people, your conquest is not complete. So niti, that is one thing, you know, statesmanship. Is that here, of course, they're doing it by force, but another way is that you convince people that what they're thinking is wrong and their behavior is wrong, and then you slowly convert people or change their thinking, which you can do by gentleness. But another meaning of niti, what I was reading, is niti by statesmanship also means the ability to think far ahead. The ability to think far ahead. And that is the difference between a politician and a statesman. A politician only thinks about the next election. You know, it's 2012, I have to be elected in November, so what can I do so that I get elected? And 2012 is over, he wins, he right away is thinking about 2016. So a lot of his actions are determined by what is going to look nice to the people, how am I going to get re-elected, how can I collect more funds so I can, you know, have the war chest to fight and to convince the voters, how I can buy TV ads and what will look good and what will not look good. So a lot of the politician's focus is on the next election. But a true statesman, a true statesmanship is one who can look 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years from now. And that leader may sometimes do actions that are unpopular. At that moment, they may appear unpopular or they may appear unreasonable, but the statesman knows that even if I become unpopular or even if people don't agree, but this is good for my country. So who can think 20 years, 30 years in the future? And that is called statesmanship, like Kennedy when he decided, okay, in this decade, by the year 1970, and it was in 1962, in the next 8 years, we're going to put a man on the moon. And people said, oh, it's not practical, you know, because even that time, U.S. had not even gone into space. They had just had one little simple flight, and they said, what is he talking? It's going to cost so much money. But that was his vision, that you know, we have to, that is the new frontier that humans have to conquer. So like Abraham Lincoln, at that time, you know, when there was slavery, he could foresee that even though this issue is dividing the country and there's a war going on, the civil war, and he decided to fight it. But he said that this war is necessary to be fought because for the long-term future of this country, 50 years, 100 years from now, we cannot have one race of people subjugating another race. And so that is called vision. You know, when Thomas Jefferson was the architect of the U.S. Constitution 200 years ago, the ideas he put in there are even very relevant today. And that is called statesmanship. That is called vision, where they were able to foresee, and they made that constitution very difficult to amend because they knew that when politicians come for certain pet causes, they will try to change the constitution. So that is called vision. You know, that is called statesmanship. In fact, about Thomas Jefferson, Kennedy once, it's a very interesting statement. Kennedy had invited a bunch of Nobel Prize winners to the White House. Everybody who had won a Nobel Prize, every American at that time, he invited them to the White House for a royal dinner and to honor them. And so all the Nobel Prize winners were there, and Kennedy was there, some of the other, you know, science people, brilliant people. It was a nice big gathering in the White House. And he makes a statement. He says, this is the greatest collection of talent and intelligence in the White House ever since Thomas Jefferson dined alone. So when he was alone, that was the amount. So The idea being that, you know, that these visionary people, you know, like the people who drafted the Indian Constitution in 1950, that is a model of freedom and rights and balance of power of executive and parliament and the courts. So that is called visionary. That is called statesmanship. So the Lord says, I am statesmanship. I'm not the politicians, but I am the statesman. I am the wisdom in the statesman. Maunam cha eva asmi guhyanam. And I am silence among the secrets. And we know that if you want to keep a secret, you have to be silent. But what people say, shh, you know, I'm going to tell you a secret. Don't tell anybody. The moment you have told, the secret is no longer a secret. And not only that, but that person whom you have told now cannot, she or he cannot keep it in them. You know, oh, I've heard this gossip. So she'll go and tell three other people, I'm telling you a secret. And soon the whole town knows. So that's why they say, I am the silence. If you want to keep a secret, just be quiet. Keep it to yourself. Do not share it. I am the silence among the secrets. Also, the silence and among the secrets, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the greatest secret, that's why the 9th chapter is called the royal secret. Why? Because the greatest secret is self-knowledge, who I am. Even in the 15th chapter, Shri Krishna in the last verse says, Iti guhya tamam shastram idam uktam mayanagha etat budhva buddhi man syat krita krityascha bharata. He says, O Arjuna, when Krishna in the 15th chapter is actually the, Swami Chinmayananda calls it the very mystical chapter, because it very clearly indicates the nature of the Lord and where the Lord is very clearly, but it's a very beautiful chapter. In fact, in the Chinmaya mission all over the world, we don't do it here for our routine gatherings, but like when you go to the camp in Piercy, I think those of you who went to the camp in Piercy, before the lunch and dinner, they will chant the entire 15th chapter. Everybody in the Chinmaya mission has the 15th chapter memorized, and those who have been going to the camps, and they will chant that 15th chapter and then only partake of the dinner, because they say the 15th chapter is the closest to describing the Lord's nature. So in the 15th chapter, Krishna says, after the whole chapter, he says, this guhyatamam shastram, this wisdom, this knowledge, which is guhyatamam, which is the most secret, I have told you. Secret knowledge does not mean that the knowledge of the Gita should not be shared with others. You know, some of the pundits or the scholars in India had misunderstood it, and they said, oh, this knowledge is secret. Only the pundits can have it. It's not meant for the general folk. And that's why it is in Sanskrit, and only people who know Sanskrit can have it. And when Swami Chinmayananda translated it into English, the Bhagavad Gita, people were opposed to him. They said, this is wrong. The Lord has said this is secret knowledge, has not to be given to the public. And Swamiji said, he says, you know, that has been the sorrow of India, that this beautiful knowledge that we have has not been shared with the masses. And that's what he said. He said, no matter how much opposition I have, no matter how many people are opposed to me. In fact, at one place he went and they would not give him a place to stay. He was going to give talks. And there was a haunted house. There was a house which was known as a haunted house where ghosts, they used to come. They said, that's the only house you have available. So, you know, if you want to stay, he said, okay, Swamiji was fearless. He said, I'll spend that. So he spent the night in the ghost's house and in that haunted house. And the next morning they asked Swamiji, he said, Swamiji, how was the night? Fine. No. He said, did the ghosts come? He says, yeah, they came. So weren't you afraid? He said, no, they ran away. He said, how did they run away? He said, I asked them for a donation. He said, I asked them for money for my mission. They all ran off. And I slept a very good night. So this knowledge is a secret because it is not known to us. Even though the Lord is within us, He's our in the Upanishad, he says, I am the breath of your breath. I am the speech of your speech. I am the ear of your ear. I am the eye of your eye. I am everything. But we still say, I don't know where God is. You know, they go around asking, Swamiji, have you seen God? Can you find God? And then we go to Bethlehem and we go to Kailash and we go to Mecca. I mean, these are pilgrimage places are good. But they say, look within. You know, in the Kabirji says, Khojo hoto turant hi paavo, pal bhar ki talash mein, kahet Kabir suno bhai saado, main to saanson ki saans mein. I am the breath of your breath. Look for me, you will instantly find me. And that is the secret. We don't know where he is and we spend the whole world looking for him. So Shri Krishna says that if you want to find the Lord in your heart, become quiet. What we do is we are constantly talking, you know, just blabbering, doing things, you know, surfing the net. And mind is running. If I have nothing else to do, I just pick up the phone and call somebody and talk for half an hour. Or I just pick up the paper and read, or just turn on the TV and flip channels, or just go on the net and, you know, just surf. Yeah, if you have something important to look on the internet or read the news or, you know, watch TV is okay. But you have to silence your mind. You have to set aside some mind, some time every day for doing nothing. I'm going to do nothing and just contemplate upon the Lord and quieten my mind. And that's what we teach, you know, in our meditation. We have a Thursday class, meditation class, where that is what we practice, how to quieten the mind, you know, through yoga, through breath observation, through watching the mind. You quieten the mind, and in that silence of the mind, you experience the Lord's presence within. So he says, if you want to experience me and know me, maunam, become quiet, become silent and do nothing. You say, okay, next 20 minutes, I'm going to do nothing and just contemplate. So he says, that is, so if you want to know the greatest secret, all the other worldly knowledges, yeah, you need to know. But the greatest secret of all is who I am. And that can only be known when the mind becomes quiet. With the right knowledge, with reading the scriptures, you go within. And in that silence, the Lord says, you will find me. So I am Maunam. I am the silence among the secrets. Jnanam Jnanavatamaham, and among the wise people, Jnanavatamaham, I am wisdom. I am the wisdom among the wise. And there is a difference between information, knowledge, wisdom. Information, knowledge, wisdom. Like in our spiritual path, they give us three steps. Shravana, Manana and Nididhyasan. So Shravanam, Shravan is the listening. So the first step in spiritual study is to listen to the teacher. Listen to the teacher. So when Swamiji comes, you have listened to his lectures or you have read in the book, the commentary. That is all Shravanam, listening, reading, where you get the information. So that is called Shravan. Then the second step is Manan, where that information becomes your own knowledge. It is so far Swami Chinmayananda's, you know, it is his commentary. So it is his knowledge, his wisdom, which he has put on the book. So I am reading it or I am listening to the teacher. And then you do Manan, you contemplate upon it. You think about it. Is it really true? Even though Krishna says it in the Gita, but is it true? Don't start with accepting 100%. I mean, you have to have faith, but you say, I still need to think about it. I still need to contemplate upon it. So you contemplate upon it and you say, yeah, it makes sense. You know, what he's saying is logical, is practical. So then you make that vicarious knowledge your knowledge. Previously, it was Krishna's knowledge or Swami Chinmayananda's knowledge or Jesus' knowledge in the Bible. But now it is my knowledge. I have understood it. And then the third step, so Shravanam, Mananam, and then the third step is Nididhyasanam, where you then apply that knowledge in your life and become firmly established, having applied that. You know, you heard these things in the Bhagavad Gita, and then you go out and apply them in your life, and then you say, yeah, I can see how it has changed my life. Like being silent, you practice that half an hour, 20 minutes every day, and see how much change it makes in your mental makeup. So as you apply that knowledge and it becomes firmly embedded in your thinking and becomes part of your life, where then you start living your life, then that is called wisdom. So there is information, there is knowledge, and then there is wisdom. Shravanam, mananam, and nidhidhyasanam, where you are applying that. So he says, I am the wisdom among the wise. So when you have understood that knowledge and applied it, that is when you truly can call yourself a spiritual person, like a doctor has studied medicine. You know, there so far it is knowledge of Schlesinger or Best and Taylor or whoever has written the book. And then he thinks about it and memorizes those facts and passes the exam. Okay, that is one step. But then the doctor has to go out and start seeing patients and applying that knowledge. And when the doctor, he or she sees that patients are getting well, then he says, yes, this knowledge is correct. And then it becomes automatic. Then the person doesn't have to think. A patient comes, he automatically knows, this patient has fever, bronchitis, I have to give him this, gastroenteritis, I have to give him this. So that knowledge becomes automatic. So he says, I am the wisdom among the wise. And of course, the highest knowledge is spiritual knowledge, and that I am. Okay, so think about these verses. This particular verse is very nice to apply in your spirituality. We'll end with the closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.